Welcome to the January 16th service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. The service is led by seminarian Anna Tulu and worship associate Kimberly Homer. There is often a gap between what we as humans profess to believe and the values reflected in our actions. Putting our principles into actual practices in our lives can be challenging. But without doing so, they are only lovely ideas. Anna and Kimberly take a look at stories from the UU history that reflect this gap between belief and action. How might it inform our present and future faith? Because of the predicted snow for this Sunday morning, this was a virtual service. No one was in the UUC meeting house. Happily, there were no power outages, so the service went as planned.
Good morning, and welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of the New River Valley, where we share a mission to inspire, create, and transform. I'm Kimberly Homer, your worship associate today, and I am delighted to be leading worship with Anna Tulu, seminarian and aspirant to ministry with the UUA. If you are with us for the first time, we are glad that you found us. You will find a link to the virtual visitor's card in the chat. And yeah, there is no paper card in the back of the sanctuary this morning. Happy snow day. Fill it out if you'd like us to keep in touch with you. If you have a joy or sorrow you wish to be shared aloud, you'll find a link in the chat and we will read those later on in the service. There are also many opportunities to meet virtually or on the grounds throughout the week. You can look at the calendar on our website for times, location, Zoom links, and contact information. Thanks to all of the volunteers this morning, especially Lucas, and throughout the week who make all of these activities possible. This morning, we are greeting one another across space. If you are joining us via Zoom, we're so grateful that you're here, and we especially welcome visitors from the UUC Roanoke. We're delighted that you can join us this morning. Please greet your neighbors by writing in the chat where you're worshiping from this morning. Please join me in reading the words on your screen as we light the chalice. We light this chalice for the warmth of welcome, the light of hope, and the fire of service. I would also like to acknowledge that the Tutelo Monacan people are the traditional custodians of the land on which we work, live, and worship. We recognize their continuing connection to the land, water, and air that we consume. We pay respect to the Tutelo Monacan nations and to their elders past, present, and emerging. A person will worship something. Have no doubt about that. We may think our tribute is paid in secret, in the dark recesses of our hearts, but it will out. That which dominates our imaginations and our thoughts will determine our lives and character. Therefore, it behooves us to be careful what we worship. For what we are worshiping, we are becoming. Please join me in reading our congregational covenant. We covenant to create a place of respect and kindness and to build a spiritual community based on reason and courageous love. While we celebrate the words of our mission statement and of this covenant, we affirm that our mission lives through our actions.
And what a beautiful covenant that is. In preparing for worship today, knowing that our focus was around living with intention, I knew specifically that I wanted to delve into the gap that often exists between our intention, that which we profess, and our living, that which we do. I found a surprising ally in this exploration in the form of an 18th century tzaddik in the Jewish tradition, Rabbi Zusia of Hanipol in Ukraine. As I read through the Tales of the Hasidim by Martin Buber, Rabbi Zusia worked his way into my heart. His dry wit and candor, both with himself and with others, his unself-conscious devotion and irrepressible love for God, downright zany at times, and his constant internal battle between pride and humility. We'll visit more with Rabbi Zusia today, but in setting our intention for worship, one particular passage jumped at me, and it's entitled The Query of Queries. Before his death, Rabbi Zusia said, "In the coming world, they will not ask me, 'Why were you not Moses?' They will ask me, 'Why were you not Zusia?' In this life, it is not for us to be anyone other than ourselves. But as each day ends, as the long day of this life draws to a close, what a blessing it will be if we can say that we lived with integrity, that our lived actions aligned with our professed beliefs, and that we were our fullest selves."
Let us celebrate our ability to contribute to our community by collecting an offering. It is the practice of our congregation to share half of the offering with a local charity or UU-affiliated organization. This week's recipient, in honor of Martin Luther King Jr., is Black Lives of UUism, BLUU, which is committed to expanding the power and capacity of Black UUs within our faith, providing support, information, and resources for Black UUs and justice making and liberation through our faith. Please give online using the link in the chat or through the many ways listed on the screen. You will be able to give after the service as well. Thank you all for your generosity. Please join me as we accept these offerings. We accept these offerings in support of our congregation and our larger community, recognizing always that in giving and receiving, we participate in a circle of care with no beginning and no end.
Today's meditation is from 12th century Christian mystic Giovanni di Pietro de Bernardoni, also known as St. Francis of Assisi. I invite you to find a comfortable position. If you would like to, you may close your eyes or keep them open. Make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may sow love. Where there is wrong, the spirit of forgiveness. Where there is discord, harmony. Where there is error, truth. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there are shadows, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Grant that I may not so much seek to be comforted as to comfort, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in pardoning that we are pardoned. And it is in dying that we are born.
Our reading today is from Darkening the Doorways, Black Trailblazers and Missed Opportunities in Unitarian Universalism by Mark D. Morrison Reed. There are stories in which you sense the storyline before you read to the end. Such is the saga of Eugene Sparrow when, in 1950, he was a candidate for assistant minister at the Church of Our Father, later known as First Unitarian Universalist Church, in Detroit, Michigan. Gene Sparrow was not the first African-American man to be ordained into the Unitarian or Universalist ministry, but he was the first to graduate from Harvard Divinity School with the intention of becoming a Unitarian minister. Despite his competence and training, he had received no offers of settlement as a minister by the time he graduated in 1949 and was forced to take a position in education instead. At the 1949 Midwinter Conference at Meadville Theological School, a petition drafted and signed by 26 ministers, supported by the Unitarian Ministers Association, and addressed to the AUA president, Frederick May Elliott, urged the Department of Ministry to aggressively explore avenues for Sparrow's settlement. President Elliott's reply challenged the Western Unitarian Conference to find a place within its boundaries for Sparrow, to demonstrate its capacity for leadership, not only in idealistic thought, but in practical churchmanship. Among the several churches the AUA courted for Sparrow's settlement, it seems that only Church of Our Father seriously candidated him. In January 1950, the church's minister, Dr. Pullman, read a letter to the church council that stated, "The AUA is anxious to have us take on our staff as director of youth activities, a young Negro, recently graduated from Harvard Divinity School, Eugene Sparrow." The minutes reflect that Dr. Pullman and the director of religious education, Ms. Moore, were supportive of Sparrow's coming because of the possibility to expand the youth program and to develop a campus program at Wayne State University, which was only a few blocks from the church. Committees were formed, information was gathered, and Gene Sparrow was invited to preach in early June to be followed by a congregational meeting to discuss the possibility of Sparrow's settlement and vote. In 2007, several congregants reflected back on their experience of that meeting. No one remembers that a panel presentation was made at the June 21st meeting. What is vividly remembered is that feelings ran high. Verbal animosity and venomous remarks poured from members, shocking those later interviewed. One person said, "The meeting itself was terrible. I have never seen anything quite so bad around the church. I know we are vocal, and I know that people have strong feelings, but it was terrible. People were screaming at one another. We wanted to hear what was being offered, and we were more for than against, but it was a very, very difficult meeting." Another remarked, "I was shocked at the discrimination. I was shocked at the racism, and I was very shocked at some of the people that I regard very highly." And another member frankly stated, "They did not feel that it was appropriate to have a Negro coming in such a responsible job. This was, after all, a white congregation, and they would be very uncomfortable with the whole thing. They didn't want him. I didn't want it. People said they would leave the church if he came. They would withdraw their pledge. They were voting simply on his color. I admit that I would not have liked it at the time. I wasn't ready for it and voted against. Now I would be more willing to accept, but I would not have wanted to have been known as belonging to the church with a colored minister." Not surprisingly, perhaps, to us here today, the vote for settlement did not succeed. The shock was followed by deafening silence. People simply did not want to talk about what had happened. One person recalled, "The reason I felt violated is because my whole reason for joining the Unitarian Church was a profound belief that it had an umbrella that took in everyone and didn't discriminate. I was perhaps too idealistic about that at the time. I assumed everybody believed in these kinds of things. It seemed to me that the way the congregation reacted that night was totally anti-Unitarian. The silence in Church of Our Fathers records about the Sparrow vote is a powerful statement of the shock and shame that reverberated through a community that had failed to live up to its professed principles.
Thank you, Kimberly. So here's another story from our friend Rabbi Zusia from the Tales of the Hasidim. Once Zusia prayed to God, "Lord, I love you so much, but I do not fear you enough. Let me stand in awe of you like your angels who are penetrated by your awe-inspiring name." And God heard his prayer, and his name penetrated the hidden heart of Zusia as it does those of the angels. But Zusia crawled under the bed like a little dog, and animal fear shook him until he howled, "Lord, let me love you like Zusia again." And God heard him this time also. It's a painful thing when we reach for our highest ideals only to realize we weren't quite as ready as we thought we were. It can send us howling under the bed, licking our wounds, covering our eyes and ears. Such certainly was the case for that Unitarian congregation in Detroit in 1950. Zusia, he was lucky in a way that he tasted that awe and the unexpected rawness of revelation. And God listened, he yielded, he could go back to loving God in his imperfect human way. The congregation at the Church of Our Father couldn't go back, though the silence that followed the rejection of Jean Sparrow suggests an attempt to pretend that they could. So often, we try to will ourselves into another more comfortable and convenient understanding. But the wound is there, whether we ignore it or no. When we see for the first time the gap between our intention, our professed beliefs, and our actions, it's devastating and destabilizing. Something is broken here. There's no structural integrity. So when we discover that something is broken, what do? When we realize that what we say we are worshiping is one thing, but what our choices and actions show we are worshiping is something else entirely. If someone falls and breaks their arm, do we just try to pull a thick sleeve down over it, cover it up, refuse to look at it, hope it'll re-knit on its own, even if it's crooked? Or do we pay attention to the break, see that it's set properly, bind it so it can grow strong again? That will hurt. Setting a bone hurts a lot. But if we ignore that break and it re-knits crooked, if and when we ultimately decide to fix it, the pain is still waiting for us. We must re-break it so it can be set right. This is the process of amends. I would venture that the worst thing we can do is pretend that the break doesn't exist. We must examine it, take deep breaths, work through the pain so that we can set it right and heal and grow stronger. The break, the mistake, the shortcoming, these are painful, yes, and we're only human. the greatest failing in this congregation story is really in the silence that followed. I wish that I could tell you this was an exceptional story, that it was only because it was 1950, but that would be disingenuous. Jean Sparrow was never placed as a minister. His ministry instead was channeled into education out of necessity. After all of his schooling and training, he never was even given the opportunity to try serving as a parish minister. Unitarianism, Universalism, and today's merged UU have a long history of aspiring to social justice and reform in our ideals, but not infrequently we fall short when it comes to action. So, what are we actually worshiping? So many of our congregations are wrestling with this question right now. What are we worshiping? We are examining the gap between our professed principles and our actions. Are we a church of ideals, or are we a church of practices? We're poking at these wounds, systemic racism. We're trying to unravel these complicated networks that are woven throughout this and so many organizations and systems. It's ubiquitous. And we're examining attitudes also around gender, sexuality, ability, politics, spiritual beliefs, and finding that we're not always as welcoming and inclusive as we thought. We're poking at something that is painful because it's broken. But this is the only way we can set it right, so that it can heal. I think that yes, we are most definitely a religious tradition of ideals, of beautiful thoughts. There's at least one person in this gathering who would be quick to point out that thought precedes action. And so yes, those thoughts and ideas are critical. They serve as a bridge to action. But how often do we get stuck on that bridge, trucking only with ideas and never stepping into the very hard work of living those intentions? Rabbi Zusya said, "The soul says the blessing, the body answers amen. The body shall not dare to speak more fervently than the soul has spoken. The body shall not dare to speak more fervently than the soul has spoken." We are a religious tradition of principles, and those principles are the blessing of which Reb Zusya speaks, the intention for good. But only the body can say amen to make it so and bring the blessing into the world. At its best, Unitarian Universalism is a living tradition of principles that provide a vision and covenant for our action in the world. At its best, we don't stay safe on the bridge of best intentions. We step into choices, actions, and sometimes we fall into the gap that's between them, and we discover something's broken and it hurts. But if we stay on the bridge, we can never do the good work of setting it right. In the past year, this congregation has adopted an eighth principle. For those of you who are new to UU, there are seven principles commonly lifted up as being core visions for how we wish to live in the world. And these principles are not set in stone, but have changed and evolved as our religious tradition has also changed and evolved. The UUA is even now exploring further changes to those principles, too slowly for some and too quickly for others. And those changes include the possible addition of a proposed eighth, which says that we covenant to affirm and promote journeying towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and our institutions. This congregation decided to adopt this principle now. The process was not always easy, and sometimes it brought painful questioning and self-awareness. But we didn't lapse into silence. Through dialogue, through examining the dissonance that arose, leaning into the uncomfortable, painful parts, a step was taken, a thought birthed into action, becoming principle, another thought. And how will this new principle be lived? The covenant has been made. Now we roll up our sleeves. When we look back on the story of the Church of Our Father, or 100 other stories like it, stories where we did not show up, stories maybe where we threw a little money at a problem and then turned away, so many stories in which we chose our own comfort and ideas over growth and action. It's painful. As I read Mark Morrison Reed's histories, I frequently found myself groaning and grieving our failings. But Mark also shared with us this concept, which was new to me, that of presentism. We tend to judge those in the past and condemn them for not acting according to our present insights and understandings, dismissing their historical context and level of understanding. We need to acknowledge that presentism is also a tendency of privilege. Among other factors, those in the past did not have the concepts and frameworks to understand or address issues of systemic racism or white supremacy culture that we do today. As Mark Morrison Reed said, quote, "Condemning those in the past serves nothing but our egos. Set it aside. And 70 years from now, could we extend the same grace to ourselves of today? Because surely 70 years from now, we will know more and be able to do better than we can today. We'll have learned something. Just as we look back 70 years to 1950, every mistake made today helps grow the knowing of tomorrow. Shame is the enemy to our growth because shame is silence. Shame is hiding under the bed, licking our wounds. When we speak of lineage, when we speak of our heralded ancestors, we often lift up the names of those who achieved, who pushed progress, who courageously lived their beliefs, and so we should. But we don't talk about the marriages and other relationships that suffered along the way. We don't talk about the imperfections, the false pride, the mistakes and hypocrisies that are part of every human being. We can't cherry pick our ancestors, not if we're being authentic. In our list of ancestors, in our recounting of lineage, we should lift up every person every opportunity where those who came before us made mistakes and bungled it and stumbled painfully into the gap. This too is part of the gift, our inheritance. This too propels us forward. We need not be anyone other than ourselves. If only we can be fully ourselves, attempting always to stitch tightly, to close the gap between our professed belief and our acts of living in the world. Let us understand that pain can be a messenger that tells us when something is broken, something is wrong, something needs our attention so it can heal. Let us find gratitude for that kind of pain. Let us step off the bridge of ideals and make mistakes and push our knowing and growing into tomorrow. Let this body be the amen that brings the blessing into the world. And let us have grace for our ancestors, all of them, and for ourselves, that when we get to the end of our day, we can say we truly were who we say we are. And that is enough. Blessed be. Our closing words today come from Reverend Eric Wickstrom, or Rev Wick to some of us. If you are who you were, and if the person next to you is who he or she was, if none of us has changed since the day we came here, we have failed. The purpose of this community, of any church, temple, zendo, mosque, is to help its people grow. We do this through encounters with the unknown, in ourselves, in one another, in the other, whoever that might be for us, however hard that might be, because these encounters have many gifts to offer. So may you go forth from here this morning, not who you were, but who you could be. So may we all, and blessed be.